Okay, so let's go over. So I know I work with some of you, but not all of you. So you all know what the first few lines of the toast is saying?
Of which toast are you looking at? Like, you saying don't ask the question?
The last toast.
Yeah, okay.
Would like to do it?
I did yesterday.
No. So we would.
Okay, so who'd like to?
We didn't figure it out. You guys did.
I would, but I have to leave in 8 minutes, so I can probably read the first few lines.
You have 8 minutes. It's 2 lines.
Okay. Lishna, it's kill, lay.
And
so,
I want to close the door while you're just standing there anyway.
So the Gemara is commenting on, why would we need a, the mahu detema of lishna to itzkil lay, kamash mohan. So the Tosfot is going to be commenting on that.
Okay. What does Tosfot say?
He hasn't said anything yet.
Okay, fine.
I was just saying, recall what happens in the Gemara.
Okay, fine.
Because that, yeah, okay. V'leka lemifrach, and there is no challenge.
Say it a little better. Should not ask. Do not ask. It's not to ask. Let's just translate the word parukh as ask.
Okay.
Okay. So, Velekalamifra, it was not to ask.
So just kind of keep this in a challenging way in the back of your head, but don't incorporate that.
It just might be easier. Velekalamifra, there is not to ask.
But that's like singular masculine present. Just to keep my... I just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Continue.
Kevan de ashram inan she'i ochal amai itzdarech lematni lemisne beresha shelo ochal lecha. So since we have the now second case of she'i ochal lecha, right, a person takes a shvua to not eat your food, as Rav Ashi taught us, why would I then need to teach in the beginning of the Mishnah the case of Shelo Ochal Lecha?
He says, don't ask that question. That's what he's telling people. Let the Lemifra, don't ask the following. Don't ask that since the Mishnah is teaching us to say.
Dash Minan is how would you translate that exactly?
Teach us.
Okay.
How do I know it's us?
The ending.
So, like, Shema, as you know, Shin Memayim, which is the Shorish, means to hear, listen, but also implies to learn something from it, to teach. So, Haven, don't ask that since it's teaching us, of course, what is teaching us? The Mishnah. Since the Mishnah is teaching us the case of Shiochal Okah, right? Teaching us that if a guy says Shiochal Okah and Usher, then why do you need to teach then the ratio in the first case, in the first part, Shelo Ochal Ocha? But then the question that he's telling you, don't ask.
Right.
So don't ask this question. So let's just repeat what the question is, but we're told not to ask it, but we're going to repeat it anyway. The question is, if I have the second case, namely Shelo Ochal Ocha, why would the town of the Mishnah have to give me the free? He should have just given us two cases. But it's now the second case, should that, and then the last case about the negatives. What do I need the first case for? So he says, don't ask that.
Right.
Here's the reason why. Continue.
Dizu ve'afzu katami. So should I translate it literally and then give the concept? So that this, and even this, it was taught in the Mishnah.
It's teaching, right? What does that mean?
So it's mean, this is like a larger concept of the first zoo is like the more obvious case, and the second zoo is a less obvious case, and that's just like a literary style to give a more obvious case and then to give a less obvious case just to for like a teaching purpose.
Yeah. No, zoo is this logic, this rationale of, it's stylistic. Says, don't ask the question of, once I have the second case, what do I need the first case for? Because the answer is very simple, says Tosfos. Zu af zu katani. That the Tana of the Mishnah, when he's teaching you things, he'll go from the simple to the more complex. Which is really part of, even the sense, it's pedagogy too, you know. When you need. So, So, the which case is simpler, shelo ol halacha or she'i ol halacha?
Shelo
ol halacha. There's no confusion. There's no possible misread of that or misstating that by the person. She'i ol halacha is a little more of the chiddush because maybe the guy stumbled. So therefore, the Tana of the Mishnah for literary style for pedagogy goes menakal el hachamur. Is that clear, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Then the balance of the Tosfos. And I think everybody got that. That the next thing Tosfos does, I'll just repeat it. That the Tosfos then asks. Here we have a case. The guy said she el hachamur. We're questioning. Maybe he stuttered. Maybe he stammered. Rather, we're not. Yeah, man. Why do we have to think it through all on our own? Let's just ask the guy. If it's a guy standing right there, why are we ignoring him? Let's just ask him. And when he said, Shio, ho, what did you mean? And he'll tell us. What is the problem? Why don't we ask him? So Tosfos gives two answers. But what's important, I mentioned that, I think, to some of you, but I don't know if I mentioned it to all of you. At the end of the day, let me ask you, if you understood the Tosfos, if a person says something, and we, the courts, the Rabbanim, we're not sure what he meant. At the end of the day, according to Tosfos, do we ask him?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We will ask him. Well, if we have a doubt, we have no doubts about the past, but if we have a doubt, we will ask him, what did you mean by that? And the truth is, we would ask him here too. It's just
they did.
We did. Just let me finish. But what did he answer us? Either the second answer says, I don't remember.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Case. Yeah.
Just don't remember what I meant. I said it. I just don't remember. So since he can't tell us, so then we the courts, we the Rabbanim, we Chazal, we have to decide then what he meant.
Yeah.
Then we'll do that based on whatever calculations we come to. The first answer that he gave is that we'll ask him, and what did he answer us?
It means
whatever my words mean. That's what I had in mind. So the thing is, we do ask him. But when do we have to figure it out ourselves?
In these two
cases. In a scenario where either he forgot what he meant, or in a scenario where he claims that it means whatever my words mean. So he's not forthcoming in telling us what he thought, what he meant. He's just telling us, well, it means whatever my words mean. That's what I meant. So we're still stuck. But we don't know what he meant. You understand? So that's why we have to figure it out ourselves. But hypothetically, what if he would have answered exactly what he meant? What if the guy says, Shioko, when we ask him, what did you mean? He said, I meant, I stuttered. I stammered. I meant to say Shioko, but it just came out wrong.
He would say, okay.
Then that's it.
Does it matter, you know, we're not dealing with this, but does it matter when we ask him?
No.
Okay.
Is he suggesting that we should ask if we're unclear?
If we are unclear, then we should ask.
It's a good pedagogical thing. Good pedagogy is just ask what people mean.
Well, that's open. In this case, the guy made a shmua. Obviously, nobody is forcing him. This is something that he did on his own. He's not going to lie to us. You know, we don't suspect that he's going to lie. I mean, he's taking a shmua. He's going to lie now.
Right, because so, I might just think that...
Ask him. We're not sure it's his shmua. We'll ask him. And whatever he tells us will dictate how we... how then we will respond to him. You understand? The final sentence of Tosfos. Is that clear to everybody?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the final two lines of Tosfos says that the Gemara in the Durham explains why Rav Ashi did not want to learn this Mishnah, to resolve this contradiction between the Mishnah in Shavuos and the Mishnah in Durham. Why Rav Ashi did not want to learn it the way Abaye did. So he's just letting you know that even our Gemara Shavuos doesn't do it, the Gemara in the Dharma does. But he doesn't bother to go and tell us what exactly the Marnadar actually said. Okay. So that means we have to look up that Gemara and find that. So I now this was not so easy to figure out that Gemara. It was not easy at all. So did anybody have any idea?
You're in the middle of this.
Okay. So what helped me, the Ran, first of all, let me tell you about the Dari. I don't know if I mentioned it. The most important parish on the Daf and the Darim is the Ran. That's why it became so popular and so important that the publishers put the Ran on the page of the Gemara. I don't know, when you look, do you have a regular Gemara in the Darim?
Yeah.
No.
I have it on my computer.
The star is from where the Rashi actually wrote this. The Rashi. I don't know enough about it, but I think it's...
So you said last year.
I said that?
Last year, yeah.
I think it's questioned whether Rashi actually did it with somebody else, but it was attributed to Rashi, I'm not sure. So you look at Rashi too. Now, and then you have on the page, they put, you notice they have on one side, on one margin, the Tosfos. You see it?
Yeah.
And on the other margin, the other side, you have the Rush.
Yeah.
So they put that on the page, I guess, to whatever. So.
Do people normally learn Tosfot on the Darim? Or is it
anything? I'm just saying to you, but the main parish is the Rav. The Rav once said that he never taught the Darim. Because he said, you don't need me. You have the Rav. You don't need me. Heard him say. So, anyway, now we're talking about what daf are we talking about? Chesai. Now, here, unfortunately, I didn't find the Ran so helpful on figuring out why Ravashi, because you know this is like about quite a few lines of Gemara.
Yeah.
It is given to explaining why Ravashi steers away from Abaye's answer. But I did find helpful the Parish of the Rush on the page. So I know it's kind of like it's very small print.
Yeah. When you have a computer screen, you can make it bigger.
So.
Well, you looked it up. If it was actually Rashi on Nedarim.
What did they say?
So there are some who say that it is only Rashi, that it's Rashi until Das Chafet, and then it switches.
Oh. Okay.
And then the Nitziv holds that it was all this is written by the Rivan. I don't know who that is.
Oh, it was one of those.
So
yeah.
That's
what he says. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know how they know that either, but sounds nice.
Must be something basic. All right. Does anybody have any idea, anything? What did you get out of the Gemara? You see where the Gemara starts talking about Ravashi, why he didn't learn like Abaye?
Abaye Maramartan.
That's why Abaye didn't learn. It's simple why Abaye did not want to learn like Ravashi.
Because it
says
the...
Abaye, the other way around. The Gemara explains also why Abaye. That's simple.
No.
Why didn't Abaye want to learn like Ravashi?
Because it doesn't teach.
She'i or Chaz. It doesn't say she'i. You have to amend the Mishnah. Yeah. Abaye is not ready to do that. He doesn't, you know, it's a good thing to make a correction. You know, so Abaye said, listen, says to Ravashi, according to you, you have to amend the Mishnah. So Abaye says, I'm not ready to do that. I think there's another way to interpret it. You don't have to amend anything. So that's why Abayu prefers his way. The question is, why does Rav Ashi reject Abayu? Rav Ashi apparently felt that Abayu's way of learning is not good. And that's why he's prepared to amend the Mishnah. Because apparently because he doesn't want to learn like Abayu. Well, what's wrong with the way Abayu learns?
Rav Ashi seems to have an issue with, like, what you say. Like, his whole focus is, like, what you say is what you mean. So that's his big issue with Abayu, not Abayu saying that, like, what you're, the actual shura you say doesn't necessarily mean what you'll do. Your context is what matters.
Yes, and Rav Ashi, you're right. Rav Ashi, say again what Rav Ashi says.
Rav Ashi says, like, the shura you make is the shura you keep.
Yeah, now that is... That's where Rav Ashi is going, but how did he get there?
I think
she said it's right, but Sarah said it's right.
I think he gets there by showing it's ridiculous to hold like a bias, because if you hold like a biased logic, you then have to say that when he says there's a case in which they could say shaloch alcha and it would mean like the other way around. I'm getting confused.
What's the other way around?
So the case that we actually have in the Gemara is when they say shalocha and it means shalocha. But he says, but you could just as easily learn the other way around, that when you say shalocha means shalocha.
Well, see,
I'm just
telling you how you can do that. But you say that's right.
Yeah, I didn't 100% grasp it, but I think
and
that
therefore,
that's
therefore, what's his conclusion? Therefore,
and that if you say therefore
the conclusion is that we're not going to pay attention to what
he's rejecting context.
Yeah, and he's saying we're going to take the words based on the simple meaning of words.
Would Abayi disagree that and say that, like, oh, you're right, there are times when you'll say lo achalna, but you really, why not? If you were
having,
I'm saying, I think Abayi would agree with.
Rav Ashi feels.
And Abayi doesn't take issue with that.
I guess Rav Ashi feels that it's just crazy.
It's hefker.
Words, then you can say something this way and it means the exact opposite. He said, no, let's decide. Words mean, if I say I will eat, then it means I will eat. If I say shmur shalchan, not to. Now, but how he, do you understand how he made the argument that, he said that, we know that, what did Abayi say in the case of Shavua Sha'ochal, the second case of the Mishnah, right? Shavua Sha'ochal. So Abayi argued that sometimes it could mean that a woman will not eat. When would that be so? Let's say if somebody was pestering him to eat with him. And what did the guy say to him? I will not eat. And then he finally said, Shavua Sha'ochal. So we're going to reinterpret that to mean that there's an Issa Shavua on what I'm going to eat from you, meaning that therefore I'm not going to eat anything from you. Isn't that right? So we took the word Shavua Sha'ochal, we sort of really just reinterpreted it to fit the context of what's going on. Isn't that right? So Rav Ashi said, well, you can do the same. So then if that's the case, then what was the first case of the Mishnah in the Gemara? Shavua Shalo Ocha. The Gemara should have done the same thing. No, it's quite Abaye. The middle case depends on context, right? Abayi should have said the first case also depends on context.
Can we read this thing?
I will in a second.
Okay.
In other words, how could the first case depend on context? Now, in the first case, what did the guy say? Shavua?
Shalo Ocha.
So,
but the reason it depended on context was because
so
the Mishnah said at the end.
Can you create the scenario? So
your friend is saying.
I come to you and I say, I want you to eat by me. And what did you say?
I will eat by you. Like, listen, I'm eating by you. And then you take, and then
No.
Why not?
And then you take a shmur.
That's the same as before. No,
the
same as before is you say,
and
I'm not eating by
you.
And then I'm fine, I won't eat by you.
But how does that mean that I will eat by you?
Because you said I will eat by you before.
Yeah, but you just said shmur shalom. Oh, yeah.
No, but I think the only reason Rabbi reinterpreted that second oath was because the Mishnah said, because the Mishnah ended Usher. If the Mishnah didn't end Usher, we wouldn't have to reinterpret that second Shua. Right?
I just talk about the
But
first.
We don't have to reinterpret the first Shua because the Mishnah, it fits in with the end of the Mishnah.
No, but now we do. Because now Abai has just constructed a whole logic which now has broader implications.
He only constructed the logic because at the end of the Mishnah, which said Usher.
What is the first case of the Mishnah where it's Usher? If guy says Shlo Shalom O Chalacha, so you tell me it means I'm not allowed to eat.
Yeah, because it fits in with.
That's what I'm saying to you. What Ravashi says to Abai, even there, you can interpret it the opposite way, based on the context. I haven't explained how that's possible yet.
Oh, there's a way to interpret it where it's still Usher?
No, the way we interpret it, that he's saying that...
Could it be the flip case?
But it's logic.
Let me say it out, and then let me just say the whole thing.
It's not the total opposite case.
So that...
We discussed that.
The Mishnah says that... let me start in a different place. Let's go back to what Abai actually said in the middle case. In the middle case, the Shavua was Shavua Sha'olcha. So what did Abai say about that? And we know the Mishnah said Asr, right? Like Zahavi, you said, look at the end, it says Asr. So the case, the guy said Shavua Sha'olcha, and the din is Asr. So Abai said, well, that would be true depending on the particular context. What would be the context for that to be true? Right? The guy is being pressured to eat. And what did the guy say to the host? I don't want to eat. And after he kept on repeating it, I don't want to eat, I don't want to eat, then he took a shvur sha'ochal, and then we'll interpret it to mean is that he's saying that it's also for me to eat.
So it could go the
same case. What would it then? I'm coming to you and I'm saying, please eat by me, please eat by me. No, I'm sorry. Take that back. What would be if nobody's pestering him at all? Nobody.
Yeah,
and the guy just said Shavua Sha'ocha.
We assume it means he's going to eat.
That means then that would be a Shavua that I will eat. So on the word Shavua Sha'ocha, according to Abai, it really depends on the context. Isn't that true? If the context is that the guy, the host, is pestering him and he keeps saying to him, I will not eat, I will not eat. And then he said, after we shur sha'ochal, then it really means that he won't eat. Isn't that right? If nobody's pestering him, and he said, say, shur sha'ochal l'cha, then we'll interpret it to mean that I will eat. Isn't that true? Well, just what I've said so far?
Yeah.
You what?
I was just going to say, up until now, I was understanding that we were saying that intention, or that context influences the way we understand the person's words.
Yes,
that's but what I'm hearing now, and correct me if this is too extreme, is that it's almost that the words are almost entirely insignificant,
no.
That it's really truly
the
context.
The context can change. Yeah, but if there was no context to tell us one way or the other, then Shavua Sha'ocha means the Achil Mamash.
But in a case where, I mean, every case has some context. So either someone was pressuring him, or they weren't.
So the context was, there's no pressure, no nothing.
Exactly.
So he just says, then Sha'ochal means I will eat.
Okay.
Fine. Now, so here's what Ravashi now says to Abai. Here's what Ravashi says to Abai. What would you say about the following case? Here's the case.
Don't eat my food.
The host is pestering the guy. I want you to eat by me. I want you to eat by me. You ready? And then the guy says back, I'm not going to eat by you.
With a question?
I'm not going to eat by you.
Like as if I wouldn't eat by you?
I'm not going to eat by you?
No, why are we misunderstanding?
One second, let me finish it. And then after I said this, I'm not going to eat by you. I then said, Shavua Shalom Ocha Lecha.
I swear,
Shalom.
Shalom.
But the assumption, based on
the
intonation,
was that almost certain, he's leaving the impression, like, is this, you're questioning that?
Right, like of course I'm going
to
eat
gonna
with you.
I'm going to come to your simcha and I'm not going to eat anything. I'm not going to eat by you. And then he said, Shmur Shalom Ochel. So then, how then should we interpret the Shmur Shalom Ochel?
Shmur Shalom Ochel.
So how would you do that?
The same.
So this is where the rush is helpful. That's what I help from the rush. If you take a look at where are we now? Let's see. You see the last two lines? Or last three lines? Rush. Just see if I can just.
At the whole rush, though?
The last two lines
okay.
On the page. Look, Bahachi Ka'amar. See the last. You have the same setup as I do? You should.
Yeah. But
in the middle of. Next to the last line, in the sort of the middle of. Not the very middle, like the first third of the line. It says Bahachi Ka'amar.
Yes.
Mashalo ochal locha yehi shvua avu masha ochal locha eini nishba ela adraba ba'osa shvua ani rotsa lechol lecha. Anybody get that? What was the exact words of the shvua? He said shvua shalo ochal locha.
So he said shvua on that which I won't eat.
Based on the context of it just painted, right? What we could say that means, shavua shalo ochalocha, there should be an ister shavua on what I don't eat from you.
It's similar to lo shavua shalo.
You see what that means? That if I don't eat from you, then I will be violating a shavua. So what is the only way not to violate the shavua?
To eat.
So what am I going to do when I come to your simcha? I'm going to eat away. Because if I don't eat, I'll be violating a shavua. So what Rav Ashi is basically saying to Abaye, the Gemara, you should have, when it comes to shavua, shalom, ochal, ochal, you should, the Gemara somewhere should have pointed out that also depends on the scenario.
Okay.
But the Gemara doesn't anywhere, does it?
No.
But nowhere did anybody comment on the Shavua Shalom Ochal Ochal. That's the first case of the mission. There's no comment about that. And the whole Gemara, not in the Dharam, not.
So that means they disagree with Rav Ashi.
Oh, so that's what Rav Ashi is claiming. Therefore, what is. Keep reading out the Rush. Elotana Haskalamilse. See, we're continuing. The Chol Shalochal, the Achel Namashna. The chol shelo ochal, the lo achol namashma, shelo lebal bel halashonos. Is that what that means?
Wait, can you go back to where we see this?
The last line in the rush.
The last line. Oh, we're in the rush. Oh, so you haven't shown us where this is in like the Gemara text.
I don't follow. Do you have the same set of design?
Yeah. I've seen that.
I'm saying the Gemara, you know this all from the rush.
I'm asking like where you see this in the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
But
so then,
can you translate that last line of the Rosh, though?
Okay, so, Elatana Hoska, well, no, said, but the Tana just made a decision in his words that any when it says Sha'ochel, what does Sha'ochel mean? That I will eat. And what does Shalo Ochel mean?
Well,
I will not eat. Shalo Levalbel, not to confuse, not to make gibberish language. This way, sha'ochal always means I will eat. Sha'ochal always means I will not eat.
Who's that? It says Tana.
The Tana of the Mishnah.
Meaning they're agreeing with Rav Ashi?
This is Rav Ashi talking.
No, okay, this is Rav Ashi saying.
What is Rav Ashi saying?
Is he saying that, like, it should have been like we just explained that Rav Ashi said
okay. according to Abai, let's go back. Abai says that if I heard the word Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha, what does it mean?
Of which I'm our Mishnah?
Anytime you hear the word Shavuot Sha'ocha,
it means Achelna.
Unless what?
Unless it's Misarvin.
Unless it means the opposite.
Right.
And what could it mean the opposite?
Misarvin, right?
Yeah, if Misarvin Bo. So if there's no Misarvin Bo, then it would simply mean the Achelna. If Misarvin Bo, then it would mean actually the opposite. Is that what everybody said?
Mm-hmm.
He said it on which case of the Mishnah?
The second case.
Was there any discussion about the first case?
No.
Nothing. So what was the first case? Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha. So what does that mean?
That I'm not.
I will not eat.
Right.
That's point Abaye. So Ravashi says to Abaye, if you're right that we should take the words that really simply mean, let's say, I will eat, and based on context, we'll just almost distort its meaning. Because if you think about it, that's really, in a sense, we're doing that. If I tell you that Sha'ocha means I will eat, that's the default, right? We're going to distort that meaning to fit the context. It's not a biased position.
Yeah.
You understand that so far? Okay, so Ravashi says to Abaye, if you're right then we should have the same discussion that you're giving us about the second case of the Mishnah. We should have the very same discussion about the first case.
Okay.
Because in the first case, it should also depend on context. How can you... What did he say in the first case? Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha Wacha. Vayeshu, what does that mean? Because it simply means, I will not eat. So I'll say back to him, but wait a second. It doesn't always mean, I will not eat. Sometimes it could mean, I will eat, based on a context. What kind of a context can you create where then Sha'ocha would actually mean, I will eat? That's the one that I just gave
you. Right,
So then, you understand how the scenario that I gave you, the context, how it would come out that Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha will actually mean that I have to eat. Yes? Okay, so then, but the Gemara never said that anywhere, that about Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha, that it could, that it also depends on context. And it did. Therefore, Ravashi says to Abai, therefore I think you're wrong. That we should not pay attention to context. What should we only pay attention to?
The words.
The words themselves.
So,
we're taking the words. So if I say to you, Shavuot Sha'ocha Wacha, that means always the Shavuot that I will eat. And what Sha'ocha Wacha means, the Shavuot that I will not eat. That's why Ravashi was only able to eat. Resolve the contradiction between the Mishnah Gemara and the Mishnah Shavuos by saying what? By amending the Mishnah that the second case should read Sha'ocha. That was the only way he had to resolve the problem. He could not resolve it the way Abaye did because he didn't agree with the principle behind Abaye's resolution. You had your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify what you meant. You said, if Abaye was right, the Gemara should have pointed out.
Or Abai himself should have.
Right, so I was just going to say, because the Gemara didn't point out anything.
Somebody should have, either Abai or someone defending him, whatever, something. Somebody should have pointed out.
I didn't really understand why somebody should have pointed that out.
Or Abai should have.
But I don't understand why, because if you.
Because how can you just take it as a rule that Sha'ocha Wacha always means I will not eat? Is that your conclusion?
No, not necessarily. Not if you hold like Abaye.
So then why didn't Abaye?
Well, maybe you thought it was obvious. If everything depends upon it, then everything depends upon it.
Fine. So then that's what Abaye would say. But Ravashi feels, well, you didn't do it. Nobody else did it, and therefore,
it just doesn't seem like a strong disproof to say that nobody brought up this argument. That's not actually a disproof, that's just like
a lack of evidence. Argument.
Well, Abaye made a point of it to explain the second case that way. Because he had to, because he was trying to resolve the contradiction. But then it should come out.
Like, do we think Abaye?
Even the first case would be subject to the same contextual.
I feel like Abaye would agree
with that, the he probably would.
Yeah, probably would. But Rav Ashi just found this difficult.
So
he didn't want to do that.
So could you
let's say the reading is hard. Let's read. See if we can read it. And Rav Ashi, now I'm reading the Gemara. So you want to do it? Try.
Yes.
Okay. Rav Ashi, Nodi Mintam Dabaye. You know what Nodi means?
To stray.
Like Nod the Nod, like kind.
What's
to stray away?
We got it from Rashi, who says
Nidod
Vesur.
Yeah, we looked up Nidod.
Rav Ashi strayed away from Abaye's reasoning, because he thought Shelo Ochal Nami Mashma Shei Lashanos. Right? That even Shelo Ochal could mean two different things. Right? Hayu Mesar from Bo Lechol. If they were pressuring him to eat, for Omar Nahira. Even Rashi mentions it. Bitmiya.
I was trying to figure out why there was any element of surprise. So it's right here.
And he said, Lo Achilna.
It's almost.
I'm like confused how it fit in.
How could I not eat with you? Okay. So for Omar, Nami.
Rachel's
so then he said, and then he said you. What? But, and he said then, Shavua. Bein sha'ochal, bein shalo ochal, hadein achilna mashma, the Omar.
I thought it was hadein.
In a case like that, where the guy was being pressured to eat, and he said, I'm not going to eat, and then he took a shmua afterwards. Whichever way he made the shmua, we're going to interpret according to the way, we're going to interpret it that he's trying to say that I will eat. So if he said sha'ochal, then clearly it means I will eat. And if he said sha'ochal, we're going to reinterpret it to mean also that I will eat.
I started saying,
let's see how so he says, Vama Nami Shmua Ben Sha'ochel Ben Shalo Ochel Hadein Achilna Mashma Da Amar. So this we would say means Achilna. The Ikola Terutza Nami Lishne, and you can also interpret his words Shavua Shalo Ochel Shavua Dol. How do you read this? The Ikola Terutza Nami Lishna. I think he's just saying now. You can also take Shlo Shlo Ochal to mean Dolo Achilna in general, meaning that the word Shlo Ochal could mean Achilna, it could mean Shlo Achilna. Elatana Poska Shochal da Achilna Mashma Shlo Ochal Lo Ochal Mashma. Therefore, the Tana of the Mishnah made a decision. What's the decision? Anytime you say the word shalo ochal, it means I will not eat. And when you say sha'ochal, it means I will eat. Period. So what you have is really a very interesting machlokas between Abaye and... How would you summarize in one sentence the machlokas, conceptually the machlokas between Abaye and Rav Ashi in one sentence? Yes?
Abaye thinks words can be defined by context, but Rav Ashi thinks words
so
always mean the
words,
same thing.
The issue that they're debating is, should context be used to define what words mean? Isn't that the issue? Like you want to summarize, you want to just get what the issue is. The issue, you see how I'm saying it? The issue is, can context be used to define what words mean? What Abai thinks what?
Yes.
And Rav Ashi says no.
Yeah.
But it's such a nice machlokas. It's nice in the sense because I think we could relate to this on both sides. I can see both sides. See, and that's our job. If we can understand both sides of an issue, then and we can really understand it, then we've done our job. Okay.
the very end, the last statement in the Rosh.
He's just actually explaining the last line of the Gemara.
So that's what I was going to say about the Pascha. And the Shalom Babel Shana, he's just saying, like, stop making life confusing.
Yeah, you don't confuse, you don't distort language.
Okay.
Language is language. Language means what it means. That's all. You can't, you know. If I call my mug an elephant, it doesn't mean that it's an elephant.
Oh, I'm really sorry. I just have to tell you, in England, the word mug has two meanings. It means, firstly, a mug, and it also is an insult to mean you're stupid. So if I say you're a mug, it means you're stupid.
Hence, like, muggle.
So
we had this one.
Yes, so that's where muggle comes from in Harry Potter. It's English, so
she mentions it as a reason.
So I just thought it was very ironic that you were trying to be precise, but I knew that it had a different meaning.
Okay. How do you say a trunk? How do people in England say a trunk?
A boot.
Yeah, boot.
Like in a car? A boot?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
In a trunk
of a car. A boot of a car.
Like, oh, we need to pack the boot before we go on the
yeah,
trip.
Call it a boot. Took me a long time to go, what do you mean to a boot?
Is there another word for boots as in the like footwear?
No.
So they don't have the shoe.
But how do you call rain shoes? Like rain boots?
Wellies.
Wellies.
What is that one?
Wellies.
Instead of rain boots.
It's short for Wellington boots because the Duke of Wellington invented them.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, it's actually a fact.
Kind of how like the Earl of Sandwich invented sandwiches so he didn't have to sit at dinner while he was busy playing
hunting.
That's also interesting that one of the different countries' words mean.
Also, cardigan. Cardigan came from a British lord.
Yeah. That cardigan is a place.
A boot in America would be a shoe wear, something you put on your feet.
Yeah, it's also that in England. It just also is a trunk.
A trunk, but we don't use the word boot.
My favorites are nappies.
Okay, let's move on. Did you all get alone?
No. We were still in the dark.
I was wondering what was going to happen.
Can we have some Rosh Hashanah chizuk?
All right. Okay. Okay. Well, we could talk. I won't
tell us about psychoanalysis.
Talk something else about more philosophical about. The mitzvah of shofar, I was talking, I should learn more of the technical side of how you blow, how you do it, etc. So, but there are some very interesting things about shofar that we all take for granted, but when you stop and think about it, it does seem somewhat unusual. I'm going to mention three things. One of them you're all familiar with, the other two maybe not as much. The first thing is that, as I pointed out in the lunch and learn, I'm sure you remember yourselves, that we blow shofar during Tefillas Musaf. In some shuls, if they can, they do it during the Tefillah B'Lachash and then during the Chazar Hashas. Right? That's a very do you know of any other mitzvah that we have that we actually perform the mitzvah during the Amida? Like Lulav and Esrog. We don't take the Lulav and Esrog.
Do they announce?
While we're standing Shimon Ezra, whether it's Davin Shabbos or Musaf or anything. We don't hope. This idea that we're Mekayim a mitzvah, namely shofar, during Tefillas Musaf, I mean, you think about it, like, why on earth are we doing that? And if you recall from the lunch and learn that the idea of blowing shofar before, it was from some mysterious gemara that wasn't clear at all. Remember about the Deva Arve, the Sasata, and that was the, and actually there are Rishonim who interpret that gemara totally different. So that according to those Rishonim, there's no marker in the Gemara at all for blowing shofar before Musaf. So clearly then from the Mishnayos and the Gemaras that we have, they blew shofar during Musaf. But that's unusual. We should do a mitzvah during the Amida. That's one observation. The second observation is this, probably would not know unless you maybe have learned it. Something that the Gemara said about Shofar. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah says that we know that the horn that we use for the shofar comes from a ram, which is a male sheep. And the reason why we use a ram, I think everybody knows that, that's because of Akedas Yitzchak, who was a ram. So that's where it developed. The Gemara mentions this medrash about this idea that we use a ram's horn because of Akedas Yitzchak. But the Mishnah also says that the truth of the matter is, though, if you got a horn from another animal, according to most Rishonim except for one, it would be kosher to blow shofar from a horn from a different animal. However, the Mishnah says there is one animal from which the horn would be pasul. Anybody know which animal? It would be a par, a bull. So, and the question is, the Mishnah doesn't really give us a full reason, but they give us something. But essentially, the Gemara on that Mishnah Rosh Hashanah explains to us why you're right, which you said, that gives us a reason why it is you can't use a horn from a par, from a bull, and the reason the Gemara gave is because Ein Kategor Nasa Sanego. Ein Kategor Nasa Sanego. Anybody know what that is?
Tell me,
that which prosecutes cannot be used to be a defender. The prosecutor can't be a defender. How does that fit into your answer? As Rachel said before, that a par is reminiscent of what? The ego itself, which reminds us of our sins. So we don't want to use something. We don't want to take a horn from an animal that will remind God of the sins that we committed. We want to do just the opposite. So therefore, that's why the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that's why a horn from a par is possible. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, well, wait a second, if that's the case, that we don't want any reminders of the ego itself and doing mitzvahs, why is it that the Kohen Gadol, does anybody know the kind of garments that a Kohen Gadol wore daily? A Kohen Gadol, not a regular, just a Kohen Gadol.
Isn't it white and half colored or gold?
No. The garments were gold. There were eight articles of gold. What?
Even like the mechnasayim were gold? I thought
No.
The basic four that were the same as
the gold. But there were the garments. There were eight garments that he wore that had gold trimmings and so on. So, and he did avodah in the Beis Hamikdash wearing those garments. So my goodness, I mean, he's wearing gold. Gold is also should be reminiscent, a reminder of the Egel Azar. And nevertheless, there's no restriction on the Kohen Gadol. On the contrary, the Torah says that these are the Begadim, the big day, what we call the big day Zahav, that he should wear. So how could it be if a Kohen Gadol can wear the big day Zahav when he does Avod in the Beis HaMikdash, so that we, wherever we live, in New York, New Jersey, and we're blowing shofar in our shuls, we can't have a reminder of the Egel Azav in New York, but it's okay. Have a reminder of the Egel Azav in the Beis HaMikdash during the Avoda? Anybody know what the Gemara answer to this question? So the Gemara answered the following. The Gemara said, yeah, the Kohen Gadol wore his big Beis Zav when he did Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. But not on Yom Kippur when he entered the Kodesh Kodashim. When he entered the Kodesh Kodashim, what did he wear? He took off all the gold garments and he put on just plain, simple linen, white linen garments. That's what he wore. And so The only so when he had to go into the Kodesh Kodashim, there can be no reminder of the Egel Azov. When he does Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash proper, then he can wear Bigdei Zahav. And apparently, and the Gemara concludes by saying, and shofar, when you blow shofar, it's like you're entering the Kodesh Kodashim. Is absolutely remarkable. It's like entering the Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore there can be no reminders of the Egel Azov, and that's why a horn from a par is possible. And that's just totally. How could it be? You mean, in Tinek, I go to my shul in Tinek, and I hear the shofar, it's as if I'm in the Kodesh Kodashim. What kind of talk is that? One other halacha about shofar. The Gemara's talk about the shape of the shofar. All the shofars that we use are what? You know, you're made of
small,
small, big, and that is what?
Curved.
Aren't they all?
Mm-hmm.
And that's straight like a trumpet, right? They're curved. And the Gemara's talk about, does it have to be that way? Does it have to be curved? Or could it be straight? So the Gemara claims that l'chatchila, as a mitzvah, I'm saying it the way many Rishonim say it. Actually, it's more complicated, but I don't know that. There is a benefit for it to be curved. Why?
The sound. We're curved when we
say
crying and davening.
When we daven,
we're curved.
So we're saying, the way is to be bent over, not to be standing straight, because standing straight is brazen, is haughty. So we're a little bit bent over. It shows more humility. Therefore, the shofar should indicate the posture of a person when he davens. So that's why the shofar should be curved. It's also very strange. Right? So the Rav, I've heard it many times, like before Rosh Hashanah, very often used to give us, a class. Shir on in Yoni the Yoma, So he developed something that it's really Rashi. If you look at the Rashi in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi says it. I grew up in Dalish, he quoted Rashi, and he just took the idea and just expanded on it. What Rashi says in Rosh Hashanah is that the mitzvah of shofar, blowing shofar, is a mitzvah of tefillah. It's a mitzvah of davening. But what's so unusual about this type of davening is it's a davening of sounds, but no words. It's not sure I'm always showing sounds. It makes sounds with the shofar. But through the sounds of the shofar, it is a form of davening. This is where the Rav took that idea. And the Rashi just says it's tefillah. That's all Rashi said. So the Rav explained, I've never heard of such a thing. What do you mean we daven with sounds? We do. And what kind of a davening is that? Wouldn't it be better to say words? Why are you making sounds? So the Rav said the following, that, especially, it's not especially, because Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin, that we're all being judged. If you really, if a person can truly feel that, it's hard to. It's hard. That's one of the most difficult things about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the cheshbon hanefesh, to really look inside yourself and to really look at the past year, how it went, to make resolutions, to recommit, or make new commitments. a very hard thing to do. It's very hard to believe in the mouth, the words, but to truly inside, truly, truly believe it. It's not so easy. But if somebody really could, what kind of a feeling would you have if you really believe that the next 10 days you're going to be judged? You'd be a little nervous. You'd be a lot nervous. You'd be fearful, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, we say in the Sanatoga, who's going to live and who's going to die? So a lot of times, sometimes when we are really overcome with emotion, sometimes it's hard for us to speak. And often, what do? When we're overcome with very strong emotion and fear, sometimes all we can do is just give out a scream, just give out a cry, with no words. Imagine, and this is, you know, let's say if you're afraid that your life is in danger, how do you react to it? Very sometimes we just freeze. Sometimes we can't even open our mouths. We can't even say anything. And if we can't, you know, it's just like you get make a sound, maybe. Just, you know, which is very true that, you know, our whole system sort of shuts down. And this is really discussed actually a lot in, you know, psychology about somatic intervention. Anyway, but it's, you know, our whole system can shut down. Our sophisticated system shuts down and we really regress to a very primitive state. And we could just sort of, you know, we might just sit there frozen, or we could just maybe give out some sounds. And so that's really, so the Rav said that that's what the shofar is. It is a prayer, but it's a prayer of sounds. Because if you actually believe in the Yom HaDin, then sometimes that's all we're capable of doing is making sounds. And of course, you know the sounds of the Trua sound, the Shvarim, the Trua, are all about moaning, sighing, wailing. We talked about that in Lashon, right? So therefore, said the Rav, that explains those three observations that I made, that why is it that we say it during Tefillas Musaf? Because it's prayer. This is the right place for it. It's just that, so we daven Musaf of words, and then we also offer a prayer of sound. So at the Musaf, we offer two forms of prayer, words and sounds. Therefore, it makes so much sense that we should do it during Musaf. And why is it that the mitzvah of shofar is like walking into the Kodesh Kedoshim? We can figure that part out. No. Because when you stand in Shemona Esrei, we say that what?
You're
made lefnei Hashem. When you're in prayer, when you're praying, you are lefnei Hashem. So it's as if you're standing in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Because you're only b'fnei Hashem when you're davening, when you're praying. So that's why there can be no reminder of the Egel Hazav. And finally, why is the shape of the shofar like a person who's bent over?
We are.
Because, so the shofar personifies a person in prayer. The shape of the shofar personifies a person who is standing Shmona Esrei. That's why all our shofars are curved, for that reason. Yeah. I thought that's something to think about. Okay.
Thank you for
Everybody have a Ksilu Kachasima Tova.
You too.
I hope you all enjoy your time off. And please review
you.
So that we
I knew you were
going to
say that.
Please review, not to forget what we've learned. And we come back, I think, on a Thursday.
Yeah. Wow, great timing.
Come back on a Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I come back the day before.
I figured I was expecting that too.
I will be.
As I say, I think most
America
people in the tri-state area will probably be here, but I'm going to stay in LA for Shabbos. But I spoke to Rachel and I will Skype or FaceTime in
okay.
for Seder and share.
So the rest of you, will you be here?
Yeah,
first?
I'm coming back from as long as my flight from Israel doesn't get delayed, I should be here.
You should or should not?
I will be here.
Could I have also? Sarah?
I'm not positive, but I think yes.
I know Rachel
is
planning on being here.
Yeah,
I'm
not planning to be here, too. So. Okay.
Thank you. Well,
thank you so much.
What are your plans?
My plans?
You're going to
be in the tent,
are your kids coming?
What?
Your kids are coming?
That's so nice.
For all of you, or for some of you?
Just so this. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
His book on the shofar.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, I got the. Well, it came out a few years ago. He made sure I got a copy.
The
shofar
book that like came out.
They just reprinted it. He told me I didn't need a new one. They just reprinted it, but he might give me a new one. I'm very close to him. That doesn't come up yet.
It's cover art. My friend made it, isn't it?
It's very cool.
Yeah, I was at a wedding with her, and she was like, "Oh, guess who called me recently?" And I was like, "Who?" She was like.
He needs her because
wasn't even in his shear. Like, she didn't take his class.
She made it for the new one?
For the new one, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I guess maybe the original one. No, you were there for that, but I don't know. Maybe he didn't come. Maybe it was like a Shalom thing.
I have no idea.
Because I didn't get it when it first came out, and like this boy, why you had it, and he was like, "Yeah, I'll leave it by my buckle." Like I couldn't like get it,
yeah.
And then like when I can't come up yet, but I'm very close.
It's
to
only
him.
On ebook though.
The
link that. All
no, there's no.
Out.
The
Shalvin
sent out a one that you could buy it.
Well, so we all got an ebook one, and I saw it. And at first,
there's
I was like, I'll get it, and then I was like, it's an ebook. I was like,
Right.
Like,
there's a little one. It's like a little. I would have lent it to Turin. I had the original big one. Mm-hmm. The Cyphers sponsored it. They did the first one also.
Yeah.
I'm very close.
How is he? He's okay.
Yeah. He's classic. Depressed. Wow. I don't know if you took him. I don't know if he pressed out the word classic, like cynical.
Is he still in
cynical.
Chemo?
No, he's been out for a while, but he said it blood cancer comes back. So he's expecting it to come back.
Well, that's a great answer.
But, he's coming out with two other books. He's coming out with a Halacha Sefer on Brachos, like a Gemara, like a, you know, through like it's being published.
Yeah.
And he's by Mr. Rav Kook, which is so cool. That's like the big leagues. They're gonna have it in like a nannies. And then he's also coming out with
that
a
is
book.
The big
it's like the big leagues. They're gonna have it like on sale when they have like Mr. Rav Kook. They always have this big sale. It's so cool.
No,
and,
that is cool.
And then
I went to that sale.
I never went.
To handle that.
And then everyone listening, you should go buy Rav Emmett's books.